If you grew up or live in many parts of Northeast Ohio and you've ever driven the back roads, you are probably familiar with the sight of a slow-moving black buggy being drawn by a horse. Same with a lot of Northwest Ohio, Central Ohio, other parts of the state too. Ohio is home to more than 74,000 Amish people, about a quarter of the nation's total Amish population. Today we're going to take a look inside Ohio's Amish community here on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
It is a pretty common wish for many of us to be able to live a more simple lifestyle. But if you want to explore simple life to the extreme, you can get to know more about Ohio's Amish community. Our guests today are Susan Trollinger, a professor of English at the University of Dayton and an author and speaker on what it means to be Amish. Also with us is Kayla Jones, Ohio Farm Bureau's organization director. Her counties include the heart of some of Ohio's largest Amish communities. Susan, Kayla, welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much.
So I will let folks know that we did try to invite a member of the Amish community to join us on the program, but he didn't really feel comfortable with the offer, and we completely understand that. And as we explore the subject of the Amish throughout the show, we'll probably explain a little bit more about that lack of comfort of being on the radio. So, Susan, you're our official Amish expert today, and Kayla, she works with the Amish, I don't know, on a daily basis, but pretty regularly. So let's just start with a little bit of history. Who are the Amish, and how did they end up so predominant in Ohio?
So the Amish emerged in the late 17th century in Europe. They come from the Anabaptists, who were a radical religious group that came out of the Protestant Reformation of the 16th century. And so they have really interesting religious beliefs. They are very focused on the Bible, and they come out of the group known as the Anabaptists, or folks who believed in adult baptism, not infant baptism, that in order to be a true Christian, one had to make that decision as an adult that could not be made for them as an infant. So they were there, persecuted by just about everybody in the 17th century, and then finally left Europe in the 18th and 19th centuries and came to the United States at that time. And landed first in Pennsylvania and then made their way west to Ohio.
What brought them further west?
Looking for a good farmland. And it turns out that Holmes County, Ohio, has some of the best farmland in the country. And the hills of Holmes and Wayne County also resemble the areas that they came from in Germany and Switzerland. And so they came here to farm.
So I'm not trying to catch you off guard here. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us where the name Amish came from?
Sure. Yes, it comes from.
Well, you do know everything.
Yeah.
I'm
well,
glad
no.
You're here.
Certainly don't. But it came from. The name comes from Jakob Ammann, who was the founder of the Amish in the Alsace-Lorraine region in Europe. And in 1693, he and his followers broke from the other Anabaptist groups that they were part of. He argued that they were becoming too worldly and that they needed to redouble their efforts to be faithful followers of Jesus. And so that meant foot washing as a practice, more communion twice a year instead of once a year, and more plain dress.
Well, that is radical. I had to chuckle when you said it was a radical sect that developed into today's Amish community. Yeah. Kayla, Holmes County and surrounding counties is the area that you work in, and you're from that area too, right?
I'm from Licking County, so okay. Just south of there.
All right. So Susan just gave us a good idea of the history of the Amish coming into Ohio. If you're talking to somebody who's never been up into the Holmes County area, how do you describe what that community looks like and how it integrates with the English?
Absolutely. This is actually a conversation that I've had with one of my board members in Holmes County. We do have an Amish member that serves on the county board, and he's very willing to talk about the beliefs and their lifestyle and all those things. And when I asked him, what would you share that you want the English community to know about you, he really had some of the myths of Amish that he really wanted the world to know are not true. So he was a little bit fired up about Amish don't pay taxes. I wanted to make sure that they really do pay taxes. They do have social security numbers and file taxes and everything just like every other person. We've talked a lot about religion and things, and just their beliefs are very similar to an average Christian believer. And they just have different ways of going about it. But in general, they're very similar people. They're great people to talk to. They're very personable, very nice, very respectful, and just generally good people who are doing what they love to do.
So I was telling you folks before we turn on the microphone, I grew up in Kenton, up in Hardin County, and I remember way back when we'd go to Kroger and Dad had parked the car and the horses would be hitched up outside the Kroger grocery, and it's still that way today, although I don't know where the hitch rail is now because they built a new store. But talk to folks who don't have that experience. Just describe where you see the Amish and how they're interacting with the English. And by the way, before that, why are we the English? Why is that the way we're referenced within the Amish community?
Because we speak English.
It's that simple.
So their first language, right, is a Pennsylvania German dialect. So that's the home language, which people refer to as Pennsylvania Dutch, which really means Pennsylvania German, not Dutch. Deutsch, right?
Okay.
So the people that they interact with who are of the world speak English, and that's us.
So what's the typical English person in Millersport or any of the towns over that way? How do they see the Amish? How do they interact with them?
From what I've seen, you wouldn't know there was necessarily a difference if it wasn't for the horse and buggy and a little bit different attire. They're used to it. That's normal in Holmes County. When you drive on a back road, you drive very slow and very cautiously because you never know what's around the corner in front of you, whether it be someone in a buggy, someone on a bike, or someone walking. So they're just used to being a little extra cautious. There is still a hitching post. It's at Walmart. There's white along the edge of the parking lot, a nice shaded place for the horses to hang out while the grocery shopping is done. But so in general, you won't really notice much different. I think the biggest difference you'll notice in Holmes County is that it's become very much a tourist stop. So there's a lot of visiting English who are not as common, not as well familiar with horse and buggy traffic and those things. That's where a lot of the struggles come in is everybody wants to go for a nice scenic drive in the country and enjoy Amish country. But it's very much a tourist stop now. And so there's a lot of extra people there during certain times of the year that can sometimes get frustrating for someone who lives there that's just trying to go about their daily work and get to work or go to lunch or wherever it is they're heading to. That adds a little bit of an extra struggle.
I want to explore that tourism aspect a little bit further in the show. Susan, to say the Amish as just one broad term, that's probably not very accurate. My limited knowledge tells me that the practices that they have, the traditions that they have can be very different just from one community to the next.
Very much so. There's a whole range of Amish just in the state of Ohio. You have the folks that most people encounter that they understand to be Amish are Old Order Amish. And that is what is called an affiliation of Amish. So it's a designator of a certain set of common beliefs that a group has. And the Old Order Amish are the largest Amish group in Ohio. But those folks are much less, the language among Amish scholars is tradition-minded than some other groups. The Schwarzentruber Amish would be among the most conservative or, again, tradition-minded Amish in Ohio. And their practices are really fascinating and quite different from Old Order.
Give me an example.
So I teach a class at the University of Dayton about the Amish, and I take my students there every year, typically. And along the way, we visit Schwarzentruber Amish families. And I'll never forget the first time we visited one family. First of all, we couldn't find the woman, the mom of the house, because she was back behind the barn, you know, cutting off a chicken's head, which really freaked out some of my students.
Trying
to go
imagine.
Walk around the barn. She had a Swartz and Truber Amish are not allowed to have gas stoves, right? So they have wood burning stoves in their kitchens, right? Which is really something. They are limited to, I think it's one horse on a plow. Right, so they can farm very little land, right, as a result. So they are basically voluntarily impoverished, right, by the fact that they can produce very little off their farms. So they also don't have windshields in their buggies. Many of them don't have the slow-moving vehicles on the back of their buggies. They use especially primitive farming tools, implements. They can't run a tractor on their land, like Old Order Amish can use the power of a tractor to drive other things on as they farm. So they are what we would call, you know, just very primitive. But that's just, you know, it's from there all the way through the Old Order, who are more embracing of technological change, all the way to the New Order, which are those folks are even more embracing of technological change.
All of them exemplified over in your part of the state, or are they more of one particular set of beliefs?
Most of the ones that I work with in Holmes County are more towards the newer order, Old Order, New Order. The Swartz and Truber clan is typically a little more towards Wayne County, a little north of where I am. So I work mostly with those that are borderline implementing new technology. Most of them own a tractor, and they occasionally use that as transportation instead of the buggy. They need to get somewhere a little bit faster. Some of them have phones, whether it's a community phone or a cell phone or a house phone that is typically not inside the home, but it is a house phone. So there's all kinds of ranges between them. And a lot of it depends on what their business line is also. If they own a business that requires them to have access to the internet and an email address, quite often they will in the name of just being competitive in the business world.
So you've helped us understand the different types of Amish. Am I right in classifying Amish and Mennonites together?
They have similar roots in the Anabaptist movement in Europe. But they are, so they're something like religious cousins. And in the state of Ohio, it's very interesting. In the state of Ohio, most Mennonites in Ohio come out of the Amish. So in Pennsylvania, things are different. There's a large settlement of Amish in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. Most of the Mennonites in Lancaster County came, their generations back, came from Europe straight as Mennonites, right? But in Ohio, the Mennonites largely come out of Amish roots, which is very interesting. So they're very close religious cousins.
Give me a chance to just throw out, we got 30 seconds here, a plug. You've got a book that gets into a lot of this. Tell us real quick about that,
yeah.
Susan.
Yeah, so I wrote a book on tourism in Ohio's Amish country called Selling the Amish. Johns Hopkins University Press published it. And it is about the three large towns in Ohio, Berlin, Sugar Creek, and Walnut Creek, where a lot of tourism happens. And I was very interested to find out what is it that tourists actually encounter when they come to Ohio's Amish country.
Yeah, I said Millersport earlier. I meant Millersburg. Yeah. Thanks for helping me correct that. We'll be back to talk more about the Amish community in Ohio with our guests Susan Trollinger from the University of Dayton, Farm Bureau staff member Kayla Jones. We'll be back right after this.
And then came meatballs made of pork and beef lightly browned, and bowls of mashed potatoes, about 100 pounds. And everyone went silent as the platters went around. There was no sound except for people chewing. Abe Troyer and Joe Troyer and Ben Troyer and John Troyer and Amos Troyer and Eli Troyer and Levi Troyer. Was he there? Yeah, he was there too.
You know, ironically, you can find a surprising number of tunes about the Amish, and we'll share a few of those with you today. Susan Trollinger from the University of Dayton and Kayla Jones of Ohio Farm Bureau are our guests, and we're back with a look inside the Amish community. Right now, though, we're going to bring in another guest for just a few minutes. Carolyn Brock is assistant professor at the University of Missouri, and she joined me by phone for a taped interview. About both Kayla and Susan were talking about some of the agricultural practices of the Amish. Well, Carolyn has done some research on Amish communities in Ohio and other states, and her specific interest looked at the natural resource protection measures by Amish farmers. Those are on the minds of traditional farmers, and they can also be important in the plain community. But they do go about things quite differently.
So they, I would say in general, have been stewards of the land and been innovators in Europe. They were highly diversified. Some of the things that we know about manure management, crop rotations, partly came from groups like the Amish. And some of those stewardship practices and ethics, a creation care stewardship that we get from the Bible, still carry over to their practices today. However, that doesn't always translate to sort of adoption of conventional best management practices that say, like the NRCS might be promoting, such as no-till, nutrient management plans, or it doesn't necessarily translate to like a high level of knowledge about water quality awareness kinds of issues. So I primarily, my research was more kind of gravitated towards Lake Erie in terms of the Amish that we talked to. So it's a complex story, like for many farmers, how the stewardship kind of element plays out.
So if the goal was to be to get more of the Amish community to engage in practices that protect Lake Erie or wherever, what did you learn about how that could be facilitated? What might work in terms of communicating more about this issue and perhaps leading to more adoption of new techniques?
Yes. So I primarily talked to conservation and agriculture extension agents and folks like that. And from that, I feel like one thing that was certainly a big takeaway is the diversity of the kinds of groups. So being aware of that diversity, a lot of decisions are made at the local level, at the local church district level, literally, which is about 125 families. So being aware of that diversity is certainly one thing. And so working at a local level when you think about these kinds of questions is really important. So, for instance, the study that we looked at mainly in Bern, Indiana area, we found there that the Amish were particularly concerned about issues of chemical use and soil health. But those two things were important to them. And that translates to some of the best management practices, for instance, cover crops. So they actually did adopt cover crops more so than some of the non-Amish folks around them. However, sort of when it came to nutrient management plans, no-till was kind of a mixed bag, and that was more challenging. And so, like, for no-till, for example, you can have a no-till drill that is adapted to horse traction. These folks are using horses instead of tractors. But sort of figuring out how to make that available in a cost-effective way. So sometimes they have sharing, or the conservation agent office might have a no-till drill that is available for use. And that sort of, those are the kinds of things that have been used. So I would say the opportunity is really to kind of look at the local level. What are the concerns and interests of the Amish there? It may be different than sort of the conservation agents kind of, or extension, agricultural extension folks coming in. And trying to bridge that and kind of cultivate on those interests that are already there, because likely there will be some stewardship interests there. And then it can potentially connect to some of those bigger issues of water quality and other things that may or may not, in the Bern, Indiana case, they were not as aware of those kinds of issues. However, receptive to the message, and they are receptive to information and can be more hungry in some ways than even other farmers, but it's very much up to an individual relationship level to be able to make those connections and make the links to possibly their interests. So there's a lot of turnover, certainly, in some of these conservation agent offices, and so that can be a challenge because the Amish are much more likely to work with folks that they know and trust, and those kinds of relationships are built up over time.
Probably a corollary to that need to have an individual relationship. The Amish don't seem overly inclined to participate in government programs, which in many cases are incentives to do different conservation measures. Is that correct, that they're not big signer-uppers for
yes.
EQIP and conservation reserve and such?
Yes, very much so. There is some reservation. So linking back to their early beginnings of the separation of church and state, and they also have a history of being persecuted by the government in Europe and in some instances here in the U.S. So, there is a reluctance to kind of sign a contract, if you will, or the contract element, and there's also an element of taking money from the government for nothing. And so there is definitely a reluctance there to do that. So things that don't involve cost share are kind of the most helpful. And there are certainly some extension and conservation agents trying to think of creative ways to make some of those relationships with the government more palatable. Sometimes working with a nonprofit organization can be helpful. Sometimes thinking about different ways to channel the money and or to let them kind of get them a sense that they're not doing nothing, right? It's a public good kind of a thing. So it's not like another kind of agricultural subsidy where they may feel like they haven't earned it, if you will.
That's Carolyn Brock from the University of Missouri. We'll be back to talk more about the Amish communities in Ohio with Susan Trollinger and Kayla Jones when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
At the end of the day when work was over, and when the evening meal was done, Dad would read to us from the family Bible, and we'd count our many blessings one by one.
We're taking some time to learn a little bit more about our Amish neighbors across Ohio, helping us understand that. Kayla Jones of the Ohio Farm Bureau staff, she works amongst the Amish in northeastern Ohio. Susan Trollinger, professor at the University of Dayton, who has written and speaks extensively about Ohio's Amish communities. We got kind of farmy in that last segment about conservation practices, Kayla, but one of the things that was one of the more important takeaways for me, if we as English outsiders, however we refer to ourselves, if we want to connect with that Amish community for whatever purpose, you've got to build trust. And talk to us a little bit about how that plays out in what you do on behalf of Farm Bureau and the community over there. You've been in the job for, a couple of years now?
I've been covering Holmes County for almost a year and a half.
Okay, so how do you get yourself to the point where when you come up the lane, they don't run away from you?
Well, I think it's a lot about building a relationship with the Amish community through the Farm Bureau over the last several years. Farm Bureau has been instrumental in helping the Ohio Professional Dog Breeders Association and their measures with the Ohio Livestock Care Standards Act and more recently, a new dog breeders bill that was signed a couple weeks ago in relationships with HSUS and those kinds of groups. So Ohio Farm Bureau itself has built the respect among the Amish community and specifically the dog breeding community. And then so for me to come into this role, initially, yes, I was a new girl. And it's just a lot of relationship building and casual conversations and, basically time spent around the dining room table or around any meeting table and the dinner table over a meal and just getting to know each other and understanding where we come from and the fact that I'm coming in here to help them and be of service to them. And I've been able to, through that initial relationship with the board member, been able to expand that amongst other Amish communities because he's willing to say that he, trusts me and respects me and is able to share that. And it makes it a lot easier to connect with the Amish community.
I think we want to throw out a big shout out to Kenny Walter, a longtime Farm Bureau employee who passed away several years ago. But Kenny was instrumental in helping Farm Bureau and the Amish communities get to know each other. Susan, you were making the point after we heard a little bit about farming and agricultural practices on Amish farms. If you think that's all they do, you're pretty wrong anymore. That the economic issues that they deal with, the economy, the jobs they have, they're changing.
They have changed so dramatically in the last 40, 50 years. Back in the 1960s, the vast majority of Amish made their living farming. That was their primary source of income. And that is simply no longer the case. Now it's only, nationally speaking, only about 15% of Amish do that. One of the big reasons why Amish move out of large settlements like the Holmes and Wayne County settlements or the Lancaster settlement or the settlement in Indiana is to find farmland that they can afford and that they can make a living off of. So those more conservative groups like the Swartz and Truber Amish, they are driven by the desire to remain primarily farmers. But Old Order Amish now, the majority of them are not making their living off of the farm.
So over in your part of the of Ohio, Kayla, if they're not farming, what are some of the more popular industries they are involved in? But I'll just tell you, I've got a barn of theirs in my backyard.
Yeah, so I think probably some of the larger ones, some of them are still dairy farmers, have stepped away a little bit from the crops and into the livestock side of it. Several of them have gotten into the professional dog breeding, and they are the ones that there's an entire organization built around doing it right. These are not your standard run-of-the-mill puppy mills, like they like to be called, or other people like to call them. These are folks who, that's how they make their living. These are their pets, and they raise them right and take care of them and make sure that they have all the veterinary needs that they require and all those things. Tourism is a huge industry. A lot of them own shops in Berlin and Sugar Creek and Walnut Creek, work in restaurants. They've really embraced the fact that the English community wants to come visit and have learned ways to make money off of it. And on top of that, you have Holmes County is the heart of the hardwood Amish or hardwood furniture trade. So there's a lot of sawmills, loggers, foresters, and furniture makers that are all over and sell their furniture in one of the largest hardwood furniture shows around.
One of the ways that you can tell whether you've entered into a business in Holmes County, for instance, that is owned by the Amish is whether or not they have electricity. Right, so when you walk into one of the great restaurants, Dear Dutchman in Walnut Creek, that restaurant is all run on electricity. It's not owned by Amish, right? And very few tourists shops and restaurants are owned by Amish. A lot of Amish work in them, mm-hmm. especially Amish women, but they don't typically own them, because to own them, then that they can't be on the electrical grid, right? So they'll have special arrangements with folks who might own a building. Let's say they'll have a partnership with someone, and that the partner will have the facility with the electricity, and the Amish will contribute the furniture to it, that sort of thing. But for the most part, they're not owning those businesses. It's largely the Mennonites who do.
One of the big questions, why can't they connect to the electric grid? We're going to get the answer to that in just a few moments on Town Hall, Ohio.
Thanks for the buggy ride. Thanks for the buggy ride. I had a wonderful time. No need of shifting gears. We didn't even have to steer. When we say giddy up, the horse would hurry up. No automatic clutch, we didn't miss it much, 'cause we were having such fun. Thanks for the buggy ride, I had a wonderful time.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio, where we're spending a little time learning more about our Amish neighbors from throughout the state of Ohio. Kayla Jones works among the Amish. She is a member of the Ohio Farm Bureau staff up in northeastern Ohio. Susan Trollinger is a professor at the University of Dayton, writes and speaks on this topic all the time. So that's one of the big questions. The Amish they do not have electricity generated, at least off-site. What is the explanation as to why Amish will not hook up to the electric grid?
They do not want their lives to be too convenient. And they don't want it to be easy then to plug in all kinds of other things, right? So if you're connected to the electrical grid, then you can have TVs and lamps and right all sorts of blenders and dryers and washers and all that sort of thing. And so it's largely a very purposeful decision to make life slower and less convenient. There are Amish who run lamps now off of battery power or other sources of power, but that is... they're very selective about what they will run off of battery power or anything else. And again, the goal is to keep life simple and slower.
What else do they do for power in terms of if they're running a sawmill or if they do need to have lights in a store? What kind of other options do you see them using in your part of the state, Kayla?
Mostly they'll use some form of natural gas engine that can be powered on site and run for the electricity that they need. They'll use it to generate heat off of it as well and use those forms of power to provide for machines and things. If they were running a factory or something, they would still remain off the grid but be able to run the business the way they want.
And it's really important too that they are much more willing to adopt those strategies for business for purposes of supporting their family, much less so in the home. So there's a fairly significant distinction between yes. what they'll run, right, in order to have a lathe going for a furniture making enterprise versus they're not going to run a vacuum.
So when I was a kid, one of my earliest jobs was I worked in, it wasn't a Dairy Queen, but it was a soft serve thing in Canton. And I used to live in fear of this 17-passenger van pulling up in the parking lot, and the doors spring open, and the Amish would pile out.
Sure.
If they've got to be transported long distances, that apparently is okay to have someone help in that area?
It is okay. So they can hire someone, and they regularly do that, hire someone to drive them someplace. There's a whole business of transporting the Amish to Florida for vacations. One, there's an outfit called Pioneer Trails in Holmes County that regularly picks up Amish around the county and takes them down, you know, to enjoy, you know, warmer weather in early spring, that sort of thing. So that's perfectly fine. Among the old order, again, Swartz and Treber Amish would not do that.
I need to back up and correct myself. I said I lived in fear of this big busload of Amish. It wasn't the fact that the Amish were there. It was that I was going to be inundated at the counter making ice cream cones for the next 30 minutes nonstop. I thought I better clarify that a little bit. Kayla, as you watch the Amish families, and maybe you participate with them, what do they do for fun? What are some of the kind of the recreational things that Amish families will do?
So it's a requirement that every school has a baseball field. So
really?
Every time you see an Amish school, there's always a backdrop for baseball there. The other night when I was driving through Amish country, there was a group of teenagers outside playing volleyball. So really your standard activities, they'll get a group of people together and find a volleyball, put up a net, and have a nice evening entertainment. They'll have events at each other's houses. They hold church in their home, so they alternate between who hosts that. So there's a lot of work around that. And it's typically, you know, the whole family comes in. If there's a wedding, then each individual family member, whether it's an aunt or a cousin or a sister, has an assignment to come help with that. So those are other ways that they fill their time and spend time together.
Susan, how about education? What's that system look like?
They are educated up to the eighth grade. They are typically educated by, most often by young women from their order, who has also an eighth grade education. And they typically meet in one or two or three room schoolhouses, right? And you'll have you'll have maybe two rooms in a schoolhouse, and you'll have kindergarten through, you know, third grade in one room, and then the rest of the grades in the other room, and one teacher teaching all of those students at once. It's really something
to see. What if you're just a naturally inquisitive person and you want to know more? I mean, is it looked down upon to further your education besides beyond the formal system?
It is. They are not to be educated beyond the eighth grade, because the idea is that pursuing more education beyond that takes one away from the community, and that they really don't need to have education beyond the eighth grade to function well in that community. It is seen as something of a threat to the community to have more education.
They will also refer to it as, this is the end of my formal education, but
yes.
You never stop learning.
That's a very good way to look at it. We'll be back to wrap up our conversation with Susan and Kayla when we continue on Town Hall, Ohio.
Do justly, love mercy, walk humbly, live a simple life.
We've been spending the last hour learning more about the Amish community in Ohio, their family practices, their religious briefs, their beliefs, their agricultural practices. I also said at the top of the show that we intended to have a member of the community on with us, and it didn't work out. The gentleman we approached just wasn't comfortable with it. We run into this a lot. We have Amish who are active in Farm Bureau. They do great things. We want to take their picture and help celebrate their accomplishments, invite them on the radio, and the answer is usually no thank you. Help us understand that aversion to, for lack of a better word, publicity.
The Amish are a people of great humility, and they manifest that in the way that they dress. They don't distinguish themselves from one another by the way they dress. So they tend to wear the same colors, the same kinds of pants, et cetera. In their minds, to do otherwise would be to put oneself forward. It would be to be prideful, right? And to be seeking special attention. So it's not at all surprising that the gentleman that you talked to was reluctant to put himself forward in that way. on a show. So when you do see, there are really great documentaries on the Amish. The PBS has a number of them. The Amish is one of them. It's called The Amish. I highly recommend it. And you will see people will talk off camera. Amish will talk off camera about their life very openly and candidly, but they would not they'd rather not have themselves featured by name and certainly not be photographed.
In many cases, you drive through the country and you see an Amish home, and unless you're paying really close attention, the only way you know it's not an English home is there are no electric wires coming in. You've been in, I'm sure, many Amish homes. What's it like inside, Kayla?
Just like any other home. All the same
minus
furniture.
The TV.
minus the TV and those kinds of luxuries. But in general, they're very welcoming places. The Amish are a very welcoming community. They're very friendly. And you're, you know, very much invited to sit around the table and enjoy a casual conversation.
They're very warm and very similar in lots of ways. They are also a lot quieter. It's notable when you go into an Amish home. You're not going to hear background noise, right, the way that you do. Some folks just have their TV on all the time, or they have, you know, they have music playing off their MP3 player or whatever. The Amish home is going to be a lot quieter. It shuts down earlier in the day as it gets dark, right? And there is more time spent with family. These days, when I talk to students, my students, often they're coming out of life experience where they're not eating dinner every night with their family, or rarely do because of sports commitments or whatever. The Amish spend a lot of time together. So there are some really important differences.
One of the big attractions when I get to Amish country is the food. Mm. And that's true whether it's an English owned that's just got the Amish theme. But when you get the genuine thing, pretty tasty, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So as we start to wrap up things here, Susan, just kind of a quick question. The Amish seem to have been able to fend for themselves and keep modernity from encroaching on them for hundreds of years. Can it continue? Can they continue to thrive and stick to what they want to do?
I'm just going to go, venture forth. Of course, one never knows for sure. I am very hopeful that they can. They have done a remarkable job of adapting to a new situation. Again, being obliged to move off the farm because of the price of farmland, et cetera, is a huge thing. They've done it, and they have remained Amish. So I am hopeful that they can do it. They have a rich tradition. They have rich values, really important values that they hold to and that they are committed to. And I'm hopeful.
Kayla, you think so?
I think so. I think that it's something that's very important to them. When you talk to Amish, they'll tell you that their daughters may have a boyfriend who is English, and I've heard the comment made before, she might leave the Amish community for a little bit, but she'll be back. They tend to stay close to family, especially when they're married and having children of their own. It's important to just stick with your roots, and that's what they've grown up knowing and believing. And I think that as long as they continue to enjoy each other's company and respect those beliefs, I think they'll be around.
They do have the numbers are on their side. I mean, they are doubling their population about every 20 years.
Wow.
They retain 85% on average, 85% of their children's. Grow up and stay in the Amish faith. So this is why they are becoming such a large population.
Your book again, just what's the name that folks can read?
Yes, thank you. It's called Selling the Amish, The Tourism of Nostalgia.
Well, thank you both for joining us, and perhaps we'll have a chance to have you back into the studio again. Our guest today, Susan Trollinger, professor from the University of Dayton, author and speaker on all things Amish. Kayla Jones, Organization Director for Ohio Farm Bureau up in the northeast part of the state. Thanks to you two for being here, and thanks to everybody for tuning us in on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.